Finnis and Luke Blackwood shut Isaac out of their deliberations as they sat on their horses and looked across a gently rolling prairie toward a field and a double cabin.
I see two fellas working out yonder, Finnis. Didn't you say we'd catch Michael all by himself?
Well, that's the way I'd figured it. It's probably that younger brother of his, that Andrew. They was always close.
Isaac frowned. He remembered one time he and his two brothers had fought with Michael over the rightful possession of a deer both Finnis and Michael had shot at. Andrew had waded in fiercely, taking his brother's side with a chunk of wood as big as a man's arm. Isaac still remembered the pain. Finnis turned his narrowed eyes to Isaac.
You're the best shot, little brother. You reckon you could hit him from here?
Maybe, but I ain't a going to.
And why the hell not?
Because I don't cotton to shooting a man that ain't even looking at me. If a man's worth killing, he's worth killing with me standing there looking him square in the eye.
Oh, he'll look at you right enough, right over the sights of his rifle. The way I remember it, he's a hell of a good shot.
Isaac glanced at Finnis's stump of an arm.
He sure is.
Finnis swallowed a few times in anger and made threatening motions toward Isaac as if he intended to do him injury. But Isaac knew it was all show. If Finnis ever came at him with real hostile intent, it would be from behind. What Finnis usually did when he was out of sorts with Isaac was to sic Luke onto him like a dog. Sometimes Isaac could whip Luke, and sometimes he couldn't. He had lost count of the occasions when they had fought each other to exhaustion, with Finnis standing there cussing them both. What they should have done, Isaac sometimes thought, was to turn and whip Finnis. But they both had pity for a poor one-armed man.
I won't ambush him for you, so you just as lief forget that. But if you'll ride down yonder and face him man to man, I'll go and see that him and Andrew don't get no unfair advantage.
And I'll be with you too, Finnis. Ain't much they can do with three of us standing together.
Isaac remembered the long-ago fight in Tennessee. The two Lewises had won. Finnis was caught between his two younger brothers.
I ain't afraid of him, if that's what y'all are thinking. I ain't afraid of nobody. I reckon it won't hurt nothing to go down and talk to him. When the talking's done, we'll see what happens.
Isaac smiled inwardly, but didn't let Finnis see it. Chances were that nothing would happen, for the Lewis brothers would be too much on their guard to allow Finnis the kind of advantage he would want before he'd make any attempt on Michael. Finnis seemed to be stalling for time, licking his lips nervously as he looked down toward the field where the Lewises worked, each following a plow behind a large ox.
Now don't you all lag behind. You stay right up beside me, because we ain't got no idea what them Lewises are apt to do.
One thing they won't do is shoot first, so you don't have to worry unless you fire at them. Then you probably won't have time to worry.
I swear, little brother, sometimes you just don't sound like a Blackwood.
If Finnis had any hope of catching the Lewis brothers by surprise, that hope was quickly dashed. Long before the Blackwoods reached the field, Michael and Andrew Lewis had walked to the end of the freshly turned roads and stood waiting, rifles cradled in their arms. Isaac chilled a little looking at those weapons. He hoped Finnis or Luke wouldn't do something stupid, or he'd be forced to try to defend them. Finnis halted a dozen paces from the Lewises. Luke went a little farther, then backed his horse nervously as he realized he'd put himself in front of his older brother. Isaac reined up a little short of both. He felt Michael's gaze touch him for a brief moment before returning to Finnis. It was clear that Michael regarded Finnis as the spokesman, and if it came to that, the primary target.
Finnis?
No howdy, or hello, or even what the hell do you want here, just Finnis. A man could put any meaning he wanted to that, or no meaning at all. Andrew didn't speak. Clearly, Michael was the spokesman for both Lewis brothers. 200 yards away, Isaac saw a movement at the double cabin. A slender woman stood in the dog run, the breeze gently moving her long skirt. She also held a rifle. He remembered their brief conversation with her several days ago. She had shown them no fear, he remembered. She had remained on the dog run the whole time, not more than a single step from a rifle she had brought outside and leaned against the log wall. He remembered, too, that she had an odd way of talking, some kind of a foreign-sounding way of speaking her words. Isaac wondered if these foreign women had been taught to shoot. He wondered if she was a good enough shot to hit a man at this distance. Maw could. Inasmuch as this was Michael Lewis's wife, he thought it likely that she could, too.
We already come once. You was gone.
I'm here now. You got business with me, let's get it done.
Finnis glanced fretfully at his brothers, one on either side of him, as if he were half afraid they might not be there.
You're damn right we got business. Tell him, Finnis.
Finnis gave Luke an irritated look that said to keep his mouth shut.
We come a long ways, Michael. Y'all them guns, you look like you're afraid of us.
I'm never afraid of a Blackwood as long as I'm looking at him. I just don't want him getting behind me.
We never come to do you no harm, Michael. The things that happened, they was a long time ago. We just come here looking for a new home.
It's Stephen Austin who parcels out the land. I got nothing to do with that.
He says we gotta have a recommendation. You could give us a recommendation, Michael.
Isaac frowned, wondering about the direction of the conversation. Finnis had already given up on obtaining land in Austin's colony, and surely he entertained no hope of an endorsement from the Lewises. Isaac suspected Finnis was stalling for time, hoping for some opportunity to grab the upper hand. From the determined look in the cold blue eyes of the Lewis brothers, Isaac judged that they could stand here until the snow fell and never give up any advantage.
I couldn't give you a recommendation to old Scratch himself, Finnis. That's what you come for. You put some good horses to a long trip for nothing.
Finnis raised the stub of his arm.
It was you done this to me. Crippled me for life, you did. I figure you owe me something.
Mine wasn't the first shot. And I fired from the open. You fired from ambush.
Isaac remembered that Michael had boldly faced the whole Blackwood family later the day of the shooting and delivered the same declaration. It had made no difference to the Blackwoods then. It made no difference to Finnis now.
This is a nice-looking place you got, Michael. Good-looking woman over yonder, and I see a young'un, too. I ain't got none of that. I ain't likely to ever have none of that. I can't work the land like a man that's got two arms. And you have any idea how a woman looks at a man that's just got a stump of an arm? Their stomach turns, it does.
It ain't the arm that turns their stomachs, Finnis. You ever take a bath? You ever shave so you can get a good look at yourself?
Isaac could see his brother's ears reddening, a twitch beginning around his eyes. When that happened, Finnis sometimes lost what good sense he otherwise had.
We're getting nothing done here, Finnis. Let's be gone.
When Finnis showed no sign that he had heard, Isaac reached out and grabbed his good arm.
Come on, Finnis, let's get.
Shut up, Isaac. We ain't leaving here till we took care of business.
We got no further business, Finnis.
There's a lot of things that could happen to a man, Michael. That fine cabin of yours, it could burn down some night with you in it. And that woman, and that button, too. Your stock could all turn up dead, and your fields could burn off just before the harvest. There's a lot of things that could happen to an unlucky man.
Finnis, for God's sake!
We can get them both, Finnis!
Isaac's lungs ached from holding his breath. His hands were slick and wet on the stock of his rifle. He felt death in the air, strong as the tingle he sometimes got from an electrical storm. If firing erupted, he had no choice. He had to try to defend his brothers. A protest stuck in his throat. He wanted to cry no, but it wouldn't come out. He saw movement in the timber down by the river. Horsemen, a lot of them. He tried to tell Finnis, but his throat was too tight. Luke saw them too, turning his head abruptly in their direction.
Finnis, look in yonder! Indians coming!
It was not Indians, Isaac realized. It was soldiers. 15. No, more like 20 of them. Finnis tore his attention from Michael, but Michael's gaze never left Finnis for an instant.
What is it, Andrew?
Mexican soldiers, Michael. The officer in charge, I think maybe he's our old friend, Zaragoza.
Isaac looked at his oldest brother. He saw rage turn to consternation, and consternation to fear in Finnis's eyes. Finnis swallowed hard. He lowered the rifle to his lap.
Them soldiers is friends of yours, Michael?
One of them, anyway.
Luke was near panic, for he had heard stories from Pa about Spanish soldiers shooting American prisoners 10 years ago. Spanish, Mexican, to him they were all the same.
Let's run, Finnis, before they get us.
They'd catch us before we went a mile. Michael, what kind of an American are you? You got a wife that talks funny? Now you got some Mexico soldier friend coming to save you?
Isaac would not tell his brother for $50 in United States gold, but he had a strong notion it was not the Lewises those soldiers were fixing to save. Michael decided finally that the Blackwoods were no longer a threat. Dread of the soldiers was plain in their eyes, especially Luke's. Michael remembered from old times in Tennessee that Luke had never been very fast in the head. He had a streak of cruelty broader even than Finnis's, but he was easier to scare. Michael was a little surprised to see relief in Isaac Blackwood's face. He had always considered Isaac the smartest of the bunch, but badly misled by his older brothers. He'd like to give Isaac the benefit of the doubt, but he couldn't overlook the fact that he was, after all, a Blackwood. The taint in the blood might be diluted some. Maybe his mama had met a traveling man, but it was still there. Michael turned half around to see what the soldiers were doing. They had paused at the cabin. Marie stood in the open dog run, pointing toward the field and gesturing with both hands. Her easy command of Spanish had been handy on those rare occasions when soldiers or Mexican officials came around. Michael had learned enough Spanish that he wouldn't starve to death for want of communication should he somehow become stranded in Mexican territory, but he doubted that he could hold down his end of any complicated conversation. Andrew had been an easier learner when it came to languages. Michael attributed that to his being more sociable. Andrew could horse trade more easily with the occasional Mexican entrepreneurs who came through the colony to buy or sell livestock. Zaragoza doffed his hat, bowed in the saddle, and turned away from Marie. He started toward the field, his troops following. Michael felt the cold chill that uniformed soldiers always gave him, even though this time they had come at a most opportune moment.
"They fixing to shoot us?"
Michael thought that might not be a bad idea. But Andrew seized upon the moment as a chance to guarantee the Blackwoods' good behavior.
"Not if you do just what they tell you. But raise an eyebrow wrong and they're liable to blast you right off your horse."
Michael doubted that. However, the Blackwoods seemed to accept it as gospel fact. Michael wouldn't give them comfort by denying his brother's words. Zaragoza rode directly to Michael and Andrew, reining his shiny black horse up beside them, facing the Blackwoods. He held a long flintlock pistol that looked heavy enough to club a man to death if the shot missed. It was not pointed directly at any of the Blackwoods, but it might as well have been for the fear it put into Luke Blackwood's eyes. The soldiers fanned out in a ragged line on either side of the lieutenant as if to cut off any notion of flight by the three brothers.
"Hola, Señor Luis.
Buenos días, Zaragoza."
Michael liked Zaragoza the man, but the uniform aroused chilling old memories that could easily get in the way of friendship. The officer turned to a young corporal who sat on a bay horse beside him.
"Les dicen que van a desmontar de sus caballos y el lugar sus fusiles en el terreno."
Zaragoza fastened a stern gaze upon the Blackwoods.
"My lieutenant says you will dismount from the horses. You will place your rifles upon the ground."
Finis did not comply.
"Better listen to him, Finis, or ain't you counted them?"
"Damn you, Michael! You always had the devil's own luck."
"I don't know if it was our good luck or yours, them coming. Either way, you'd best listen to what the soldiers say. I've seen what they can do. So's your old daddy."
Isaac dismounted, laying down his rifle and gripping Finis's reins with his big-knuckled right hand.
"Come on, Finis. Ain't no show for us now but to do what they tell us."
The young soldier listened to the officer a moment.
"Preguntarle si tiene tierras en Austin, Solución."
"You have land in Esteban Austin's colony?"
Finis sat slumped in defeat and did not reply.
"No, we just come now out of Tennessee."
"No, no solo salió de Tennessee."
"Decirles, tenían mejor volver a Tennessee. No hay lugar para la gente que hacer problemas en Texas."
"The lieutenant, he says it is better you return to Tennessee. People who make trouble, there is no room for them in Texas."
"We got a right."
The soldier's face flushed with sudden anger.
"You are Americano. You have no rights in Texas, but those our government gives you. Here, the lieutenant is the government. He says you do not stay."
Finn has lost what little momentary bluster he'd managed. He dismounted as ordered and laid his rifle carefully on the green grass. Luke followed his example. The soldier dismounted and gathered up all three weapons. The officer turned back to Michael and Andrew, taking time now to shake hands. Michael steeled himself a little and looked directly into Zaragoza's friendly brown face, trying to see only an old acquaintance and not the uniform. It was difficult to shut out the other soldiers. Their presence, welcome though it was, rekindled the painful memory of the day Spanish troops had killed his father and the other men who had ridden with him. Michael felt his mouth going dry. He was not much of a whiskey-drinking man, but at this moment he could have done good service with a jug of Kentucky Squeezins. Andrew evidenced no such reservations. He grinned like a fox stealing grapes, indicating how glad he was to see Zaragoza and his men.
Which way you headed, amigo?
We go to San Felipe de Austin, then up to Nacogdoches. The lieutenant says we will take these men with us and see that they leave Texas.
You saying we're your prisoners?
Supongamos que son nuestros invitados. Estaríamos más perjudicados si no siguen siendo nuestros huéspedes todo el camino al río Sabine.
Let us say you are our guests. We would be most hurt if you did not remain our guests all the way to the Sabine River.
Luke glanced woefully at his older brother.
The Sabine? Ain't that the one we swum over getting out of Louisiana? That's a powerful long ways.
A long ways. Too far for you to be coming back. Was they to catch you trying? They'd shoot you like as not and throw you into a bush belly up like they do a snake.
Michael was gratified to see fear stark and cold in Finnis's eyes. Cruel and cold-blooded though he might be, Finnis Blackwood was a coward like his daddy before him. Old Cyrus Blackwood had betrayed his fellow Tennesseans to the Spanish military to save his own skin. He bore the stain of Judas. Finnis was cut from the same shoddy piece of cloth. Michael didn't think Finnis would try anything foolish now, not with so many Mexican soldiers ready to cut him down. And Luke wouldn't do anything unless Finnis put him up to it. He had no initiative of his own. Isaac? Michael was not sure what to make of Isaac. He saw no fear in Isaac's eyes, only an odd sort of relief that left Michael puzzled. He surmised that Isaac's heart had not been totally committed to this little sachet in the first place.
We ain't settled nothing, Michael.
There's nothing left to settle. Looks to me like the soldiers are taking care of it all.
Maybe. And maybe you'll see us again sometime. Me and you still got us an accountant.
You better write it paid and forget about it, Finnis.
Say, Lieutenant Zaragoza, junior soldiers like to camp at our place this evening?
Michael flinched. He would be pleased to host Zaragoza. But all those troopers, looking so much like the men who had slaughtered the Tennesseans on an open prairie so long ago. He closed his eyes and tried to shut out the insistent image that kept coming back. Zaragoza eased his fears. He had never gotten down from the big black horse.
Lamento que debo disminución. Muchas horas siguen siendo a la luz del día. Y deseamos que mucho más cerca San Felipe antes noche. Nos visita Esteban Austin en la mañana. Es todavía un largo camino de Nacogdoches.
I much regret that I must decline. Many hours remain of the daylight, and we would wish to be much nearer San Felipe before night. We would visit Esteban Austin in the morning. It is yet a long way to Nacogdoches.
Michael did not give Andrew a chance to argue.
We understand. Probably best that way. The further you take the Blackwoods away from this place, the better we'll feel.
There is old trouble here?
You remember the wretch who betrayed my father to the soldiers?
I remember.
The royalist zealot, Lieutenant Armando Rodriguez, had ordered Zaragoza to shoot both the wounded boy Michael and the cringing old Cyrus Blackwood. Zaragoza had disobeyed at considerable peril to himself. Michael pointed his chin toward the Blackwoods.
That was the daddy of these men here. Blood ain't improved a bit.
Zaragoza's interest quickened as he studied the three brothers. He acknowledged the family's resemblance. Isaac Blackwood appeared saddened.
Then it's true. Pa always swore that what you said was a lie.
Old Cyrus swore a lot.
Then this here soldier saved Pa's life. And yours.
He did.
Finnis raised his stump of an arm.
It's a damn shame he didn't kill you. I'd still be a whole man.
You never was a whole man, Finnis. Even before you made me shoot you, you was a moral cripple.
Zaragoza nodded affably to Michael and Andrew.
Now we must go. Adios, amigos.
Zaragoza touched his spurs to his black horse and reined him eastward. His troopers closed around the Blackwoods and followed. Finnis turned in the saddle.
It ain't over, Michael.
Better hush, Finnis!
Michael thought there might be hope for one Blackwood.
Not to complain about your shed, Michael, but maybe now I can afford to go home and get a good night's sleep in my own bed.
Michael lowered his rifle to arm's length. He had not realized he still held it cradled in his arms, as if for quick duty.
Surely you wasn't afraid of them, Blackwoods. Worst day we ever had, we could have taken care of ourselves against such as them.
I expected them to sneak up and try to shoot you in the back.
They never could shoot very straight.
Even a blind hog finds an acorn once in a while.
Andrew looked back toward the cabin. Marie still stood in the dog run, watching, though she had put her rifle away.
I only regret that I can't stay around here and eat at Marie's table. It's back to my own cooking.
Michael thought his brother'd put on a few pounds in the days he had spent here helping watch for the Blackwoods. Like just about every bachelor Michael had known, Andrew had done himself proud when he had a chance to eat in a woman's kitchen.
No use being in a hurry about it. We just as well finish the day in this field and let Marie fix supper for you.
Andrew was still looking toward the cabin. Michael saw something in his brother's eyes that bothered him. It appeared there every time Marie was in sight.
You know what's the matter with your cabin, don't you?
The matter? Ain't nothing the matter with it. The roof's tied and the walls are chinked good and proper.
It's too empty. Needs a woman in it. There's bound to be a likely young lady someplace just waiting for you to fetch her a bouquet.
Yeah, Marie's been telling me the same thing. Women are even scarcer around here than money.
If a man can't catch fish on his own side of the stream, he goes where the fish are hungry and biting.
Yeah, it's a long way from here to anywhere. And I got mighty little for bait. You can't swap a bundle of winter pelts for a woman like you'd swap for coffee and beans, even if you could find one.
You got a land claim. You got a future. That's all I had when me and Marie got married. It's still all I've got except for her and the baby. She don't complain.
She never would. Marie's special. You could hunt for 10 years and not find another one like her.
Michael frowned. He had long sensed that his brother was drawn to Marie. He was convinced it was not a personal thing, especially. It was just the natural attraction of a man to a woman, any woman, when he lived alone. Michael told himself it was nothing that ever need worry him. The situation would resolve itself when Andrew found a woman of his own. If he found a woman of his own.
Yeah, this is one time that seeing soldiers didn't seem to upset your liver too much.
Saragossa was with them. Anyway, if they hadn't showed up, we might have had to kill that whole bunch of Blackwoods. They wouldn't be worth the aggravation.
Michael looked up at the afternoon sun.
Let's see how many rows we can get planted before sundown.
Michael fed the animals in the fading light of the spring evening before seeing to his and Andrew's own supper. It had always been a cardinal rule among the Lewises that the welfare of their livestock was the first order of business. A man could miss a few meals without dire consequences, but if his animals went hungry, he might find himself afoot or with nothing to pull a plow. Andrew went to the cabin to fetch the wooden milk bucket, carrying an armload of firewood in for Marie as he went. Michael frowned, watching. It was a good thing Andrew didn't stay here all the time. He'd have Marie too spoiled to live with. Andrew returned with the bucket.
I'll leave old boss with you till your cow freshens. That boy needs a milk a lot more than I do.
Old boss always stomps at the bucket when I try to milk her. She gets along a lot better with Marie.
That's just an excuse so you don't have to milk her yourself. You better take good care of Marie. You'll never find another one like her again.
I don't intend to ever look.
Saragossa glanced back once before the Lewis cabin dropped out of sight behind him. He had been tempted to accept Andrew's offer and camp the night on the river. It would have been pleasant to spend a few hours in the glowing company of Michael's wife, Marie, for she reminded him considerably of his own Elvira. He found himself missing his wife terribly, though he had been away from her only 3 days. He would be fortunate if he got back to her within 3 months. When he returned from this mission, he would give serious thought to her father's offer of a place on the family farm. Soldiering was all right for a bachelor, but it involved too much traveling for a man who had a family. This trip made him realize how much he was tiring of it. He would have liked to listen longer to Marie Lewis's lively version of Spanish. It had little of the intriguing accent that came from the relative isolation of her forebears in northern Texas and Louisiana, and perhaps just a trace of the French influence imposed by her father. Marie and Elvira would get along nicely, but it was unlikely they would ever meet, for the social and cultural division between the Mexican town of Bar and the American colonies to the east was like a great stone wall that could be climbed from neither side. Saragossa felt this same alienation even from the two Lewis brothers, though he had known and liked them for several years. It was a pity, for he would prefer to be a closer friend. Language was just one of the barriers that stood between them. Earlier, Saragossa had noticed the three Blackwoods who seemed to be quarreling among themselves. He had motioned for the young Corporal Diaz, the interpreter, to drop back and listen discreetly. Presently, Zaragoza nodded for him to come forward.
What is the disagreement between them?
Well, the two are blaming the young one. They say he could have shot Miguel Lewis from a distance and spared them all this trouble. He is saying they were wrong to come here at all.
So long as they quarrel among themselves, perhaps they will not give us trouble.
I do not think they will give us trouble anyway. They are frightened of us, especially the two. They speak of their father and what happened to him.
Perhaps I should have followed my orders 10 years ago and killed him. The world would not have mourned the loss.
Those named Lewis, they are really your friends?
I once saved the life of the one named Miguel. Years later, he and the brother did me a great service in return. Yes, they are friends, as much as any Americanos can be friends to one of us.
It is hard to see any of them as friends.
You have lived among them, have you not? I understand that is how you learned to speak English.
My family had a farm not far from Nacogdoches. The Lieutenant Rodriguez decided my father was disloyal to Spain. We had to flee into Louisiana. We lived among the Americanos until Mexico freed itself from the tyranny.
Surely you must have made some friends among them.
We lived among them. We worked among them. Friends? Never. We were much too different.
How so?
The language, the customs. And the Americans never seemed to have enough of anything. If they had one horse, they wanted two. If they had two horses, they wanted four. If they had 100 hectares of land, they wanted twice as many. I could never understand their hunger.
Whether we like it or not, they are among us now.
Not if the choice were mine. We have made a mistake, sir, letting them come into Mexico. Wait, watch. They remain Americans. How long do you think they will be content to live under Mexican laws instead of their own? Even Miguel Lewis, who is your friend. Did you see how he looked at the rest of us? He does not like us.
That is your imagination.
Zaragoza knew it was not. He had seen the look in Michael Lewis's eyes. But he thought he knew the reason for it. He knew the memories that haunted the Tennessean. For at times they haunted Zaragoza as well. Diaz turned and looked back with a dark frown at the Blackwoods.
These and their kind will keep coming no matter what we do. The day will come and we will regret that we ever let the first American stay in Texas. The day will come when we have to go to war with them and take Texas back. Or we will lose it.
Zaragoza turned his gaze back toward the river. Diaz had struck a painful nerve, for the same thought had troubled Zaragoza from time to time.
As I remember, there is a nice spring a few miles farther on, which affords fresher water than we can get from the Colorado. We will find it and camp there tonight.
Andrew had observed with misgivings that Michael was becoming increasingly ill at ease. Confined since spring and into the summer to a cabin and field, and the limited stance which his cattle roamed in their casual grazing along the river. Michael betrayed his restlessness and the way he would sometimes halt whatever he was doing and stare off into the distance, usually westward. One day Michael found him standing beside the river, the empty wooden bucket in his hand. Michael gazed wistfully upstream toward the unknown and where the Comanches roamed free. Andrew felt a jolt as he realized how much Michael resembled their father Mordecai, and how often he had seen this look in Mordecai's eyes. Usually it was just before he left on an extended trip to God knew where. Andrew deemed it prudent not to speak of it openly, but he thought Michael would understand his meaning as he approached.
You got a wife here that needs you? And a baby on the way.
Michael tensed, as if surprised that Andrew had read his mind.
The corn and the cotton are hoed out good. Marie's been needing some stuff. I've been thinking about riding down to San Felipe.
San Felipe was to the east. Michael was looking westward. Andrew pondered the possibilities. On the one hand, it might relieve some of the pressure if Michael did go to San Felipe and get away by himself for 2 or 3 days. But on the other, Andrew suspected he would not be content with a trip so short. The limitless and mostly unexplored land that was Texas spoke to men like Michael in ways other men would never hear. 2 or 3 days could stretch into 2 or 3 weeks, even 2 or 3 months. It often had with Mordecai. and a trip started eastward toward San Felipe could easily turn back upon itself, ending up to the west instead, perhaps even to search out the headwaters of the Colorado River. Of late, Michael had spent a lot of time contemplating the swift-flowing waters. Many things could happen to Marie while Michael was gone, and few of them were good.
I've been thinking about going to San Felipe myself. Whatever Marie needs, I can fetch it back.
You don't trust me to come home?
You'll come home. Only question is when. I know you, Michael.
No, you don't. You're a farmer at heart. I've had to force myself into that mold, and it's a damn tight fit. You don't know how it binds me to be tied to one place and not be able to move around free.
What about Marie? She's tied down, too? How long since she's been any farther off this farm than over the Willets?
But she don't have the need. She's a woman. It's in her nature to build a nest and stay there.
But not by herself. You ain't a free man anymore. You got a responsibility here. If anybody goes to San Felipe, it'll be me.
When I started to Texas from Tennessee and you tagged along after me, I had a good notion to chase you back. Maybe I ought to have done it.
Maybe you could have done it then. Couldn't do it now. You need me here to keep you pointed in the right direction.
I don't need you trying to mind my business.
Michael turned away from Andrew and stepped off several angry paces before he stopped. He stood a minute, his back to Andrew. Then he turned again, grudgingly resigned.
Marie will have to tell you what she's needing. Can't be much, because we got mighty little money to buy anything with.
In Austin's colony, most negotiations were done through barter rather than in coin. All the honest coin for 70 miles along both the Colorado and the Brazos Rivers probably wouldn't fill a demijohn.
I'll bring old boss down here before I leave. Marie and little Mordecai could probably use the milk.
No need. Our cows give him more than enough.
Then I'll just turn her calf out with her till I get back. No hard feelings?
I wouldn't go so far as to say that.
Michael walked back to his shed, picked up a hoe, and strode stiffly off toward the field, leaving the water bucket empty. Regret weighed heavily upon Andrew as he watched, but he contented himself with the conviction that what he had done was best for Marie. He could only hope that Michael would eventually realize it was for his own benefit as well. Andrew had always considered Marie beautiful, and she had never been more so than now, her dark eyes sparkling with the anticipated joy of another birth. Her stomach, normally small, was beginning to expand some, but she managed to move with a certain ease and grace. If she had slowed any in her work routine, Andrew was unable to discern it. Watching her bustle about the kitchen, trying to keep up a busy show of normalcy, he felt a melancholy longing to take her into his arms and hold her protectively. This made him cautious about getting close. As much as possible, he kept a nervous distance, at least half the width of the room. If she knew, she gave no sign. But he wondered, how could she not know?
Michael asked me if I'd mind going to San Felipe. Said there's some things you're needing.
You are going? I thought Michael... Oh, thank you, Andrew. I have much dreaded the day he would go.
Yeah, he wasn't hard to talk out of it. He knows he belongs here with you.
I would not tell him he should not go. That he must know for himself.
He knows. Otherwise, I couldn't have convinced him so easy.
I suppose. He tries, but he cannot help being as he is, and I would be much wrong to try to force him.
Andrew was eager to change the subject, for discussing Michael's restless nature was as futile as complaining about the hot, humid summer winds that forced their way inland from the Gulf and sometimes left him gasping for a good breath.
What all you need from San Felipe?
Oh, very little. A Mexican woman is there, a midwife. She puts together a mixture they say helps ease a woman who is in the hope. I think she would trade some of it for a ham from our smokehouse. It should cost no money.
It pained Andrew to see Marie do without most of life's conveniences. He wondered sometimes what Marie's father, old Baptiste Villeray, would say if he could see how his daughter lived in this rough cabin of oak logs, hands raw from hard work, her few clothes patched and faded from wear and washing. She shunned little niceties that she once had taken for granted, protecting her precious little money for those few things that were absolute necessities. If he knew, The prosperous old French merchant would probably drive a team of good horses to death getting here from Louisiana as quickly as he could. But then he and his wife had pioneered in their own time. They had not always had the comfort they enjoyed now. Each generation made its own way, invented its own life. If Andrew were in a hurry, unmindful about the welfare of his mount and the packhorse that carried some winter-cured hides for barter, he could reach the seat of Austin's colony in less than half a day. He took his time, however. He could sympathize with Michael's cooped-up feeling. He had some of the same symptoms, if considerably less severe. Both men had spent many long weeks getting the crops up, properly hoed, and on the way toward harvest. He watched for any new arrivals who might have broken out their first land this spring and summer while he had been too busy with his own place to know what anyone else was doing. The sight of a new farm, of a new chimney sending its friendly smoke skyward, always brought him a sense of satisfaction. It pleased him to see the land becoming populated. He liked knowing he had neighbors close by. The more, the better. By contrast, Michael fretted helplessly when he saw the prairie sod broken and the trees cut down. He had favored this land the way it was the day he had first arrived. Sometimes Michael wondered if Andrew did not begrudge even the trees down for the cabin he shared with Marie and the boy Mordecai. It was certain that Michael saw his field as a necessity, not a joy. They were brothers, but on this basic issue they sometimes argued. Given his chance, Andrew sometimes thought Michael would probably move to the moon. There, nobody would crowd him. It was in his mind to spend the night at the cabin of the Willett family, a few miles east of his own place. Old man Lige Willett could talk the bark off of a tree, and that was what Andrew needed right now. Some congenial socializing with people he liked, people beyond just family. They called him Old Man Willett, though in truth he was probably no older than his middle 40s. That was old by the standards of the Texas colonies, for this was a young man's province. Breaking out new land, opening a new empire, was young man's work. The Willett place was larger than either Michael's or Andrew's, for Willett had a sizable family and qualified for a larger block of land. One of his sons had come of legal age, expanding the family holdings. For a man who loved to talk and played the fiddle better than anyone Andrew had ever heard, Lige Willett was nevertheless about as hard-working and knowledgeable a farmer as Andrew had ever known, perhaps as good as his own Uncle Benjamin back in Tennessee. His fields were clean, his rows straight as a new pine plank fresh from the sawmill. He had even found time to set out an orchard. Willett was going to be a most popular man in 2 or 3 years, when those trees began bearing fruit enough to make a neighbor's journey worthwhile. Andrew suspected that was the main reason for the orchard in the first place. Willett loved company. He expected to find Lige in his field, for it was just mid-afternoon. Several hours of daylight were left for righteous labor before the farmer put the day's due behind him to go in for supper and a leisurely hour or two of talking and fiddle playing to pass the evening. That was the Lord's reward for a day's work well done, Willett always said. However, Andrew found only the oldest son, Zebediah, in the field, hoeing out a fine stand of corn. One of the youngest boys, a blonde youngster named Daniel, leaned against the fence. At his feet was a wooden bucket with a tin dipper floating in it. The boy had brought fresh water to his older brother.
You're doing the work of two mules, Zeb. That'll make an old man out of you.
Zeb was always a serious one, in strong contrast to his jovial father. He nodded and leaned for a moment on the hoe, wiping his sleeve across his forehead. The sleeve was almost the only part of his shirt not soaked with sweat.
Good day to you, Mr. Lewis. If you're looking for Papa, he ain't here. He's gone over to help some new neighbors raise them a cabin.
New neighbors? Which way?
A couple miles down the trail toward San Felipe. Ain't hardly no way you can miss it. Folks' name is Nathan.
Andrew dismounted and walked up to the boy at the fence.
Got enough water to spare me a drink, Daniel?
If I ain't, I'll go fetch another bucket.
Andrew took a long drink of water from the dipper, then sipped a little more while he admired the standing corn.
Dang, Zeb. You and your father sure are doing a nice job with this corn.
Young Daniel pointed enthusiastically.
Papa traded and got me a pony. He's out yonder if you'd like to see him.
You oughtn't to pester everybody who comes along about that pony, Daniel. They ain't all as interested as you are.
Yeah, I'd be tickled to look at him. I've been thinking about finding a pony for Michael's boy, Mordecai. They'll pretty soon be getting big enough to learn how to ride.
Andrew tied the pack horse to the fence and motioned for the boy to swing up behind his saddle. They rode off in the direction Daniel pointed. A little east of the family's sprawled log cabin, they came upon half a dozen horses grazing.
That there's him, the sorrel one.
The pony was of a nondescript nature, looking like a scrub out of a wild Mustang band.
Well, that there might be the dandiest looking pony I ever seen. You should be right proud of him.
The boy beamed proudly.
I didn't know you all had this many horses.
Papa done some trading with an old man who come down from Louisiana. Him and the old man went over to the new neighbor's place this morning to see if they'll be needing any horses.
What old man was that?
I disremember his name. Just an old man with gray whiskers. Papa traded him some pelts and stuff. You ever seen a prettier pony?
Don't reckon I ever did.
Andrew returned the boy to the field and retrieved the pack horse. He waved his hand at Zebediah, who had worked his way far down a row. Andrew then set out eastward in an easy trot that would not tax the animals. It was in his mind that if he came across the old man from Louisiana, he wouldn't mind trading his own brown mount for a better one. Trouble was, he probably had nothing much to offer for boot. Texas was big and fresh and beautiful and new, but almighty stingy with its material blessings. In a place where last spring he had ridden across an open grassland prairie, he found a family just starting the raising of a log cabin. They had evidently lived out of their wagon until they got their field broken and planted, which showed they had their priorities in order. Their crops appeared late, however. That meant they would go into fall praying for a late frost, so they wouldn't lose the corn before it could reach maturity. Andrew knew the people had spotted him when he was still 300 yards away, for a man stopped chopping and trimming a pine log that lay on the ground. He waved his hat as a sign for Andrew to come on in. There'd been times and places when the first thing a man did upon seeing a stranger was to fetch his rifle, just in case. Andrew surmised that these folks came from a civilized country. He recognized old man Willett 100 yards or so before he reached the cabin. Willett, a broad-shouldered, broad-hipped man of some 200 pounds, walked out to meet and greet Andrew.
Come on in here, Andrew Lewis, and meet these good folks. We need one more strong back anyway to help us lift them logs up where they're needful.
Like his young son Daniel, Lige Willett had a grin as wide as a barrel hoop. Andrew could not conceive of his having an enemy anywhere in the world. Willett was a red-faced man with an unruly shock of rust-colored hair curling out from under an old black hat that had probably been new 20 years ago. Andrew swung down from his horse. He endured the crushing grip of the man's ham-sized hand and the breathtaking slap of that same hand across the middle of his back.
Miles Nathan, I'd like you to meet Andrew Lewis. Him and his brother Michael are your neighbors a ways on up the river.
Howdy.
Nathan drove the blade of his axe into the end of a log and left it there. Like Willett, he was a large man with a ruddy, deeply creased face that easily broke into a broad smile. He wiped the back of his hand across his sweaty face and walked forward, extending the other hand.
If Willett vouches for you, you're mighty welcome at our house. Can't say in our house. We ain't got it finished yet.
If any bones in Andrew's hand remained uncrushed after Willett's grip, they fell victim to Nathan's, strong enough to choke a bear. This was a lonesome country where no man remained a stranger long. Nathan made a broad sweep with his hand.
This here's my family.
Andrew took off his hat in deference to a bonneted woman in her 30s. Nearby stood a girl. He guessed her at 12 to perhaps 14, and he took note that she was some shy of marrying age. Then wondered why such a notion had even come into his head.
My sister-in-law Marie'll be tickled to hear we got some new neighbors.
We knowed there's folks up that way, but we've been too busy to come calling. Didn't get our seed planted till late. If we don't make a crop, we're apt to have us a mighty long, thin winter.
Andrew nodded, remembering. The same thing had happened to him and Michael and Marie their first year. They'd managed to survive largely on wild game. Now the hunting had already been compromised because the land was becoming more densely settled. What the Lewises had done, these people might not be able to do. Well, he and Michael would not let them suffer, nor would the Willets. They would share if the need came. That was the way people did in a pioneer country like this. Andrew looked at the children, ranging in age from 2 or 3, about the size of little Mordecai, up to the girl. By the time they got grown, this land would see a lot of changes. Andrew had to stare wishfully for a moment at the wagon. The Nathans were fortunate to have it, for wagons remained a luxury in Austin's colony. They were difficult to transport the long distance overland and prohibitively expensive to ship to the Texas coast by sea. Most people packed their goods on horseback or on mules, or they built a log sled, like a raft on skids, often difficult for horses or oxen to pull. Andrew and Michael had little hope of acquiring a wagon for a few years yet. He figured the Nathan family would be mighty popular around these parts. Sharing with neighbors was like an 11th commandment, and a lot of people would want to borrow that wagon. Mrs. Nathan's face was half hidden by the long bonnet that cast a shadow over her features, but her rough hands bore ample evidence of a life of hard work. Her eyes betrayed no complaint, and her smile was broad.
I'll fix you men some coffee. Come along, Bertie, and stoke up the fire a little.
Andrew decided to bide a while with this good company. He pitched in to help shape the logs for the cabin wall, answering Nathan's urgent questions about the land, the seasons, the best ways of coaxing a good crop out of the soil. Andrew assured him that Willett was the best man to advise him.
He's the best farmer on the Colorado River. Me and Michael, we come over to his place and take lessons from him.
Willett tells me you've had very little Indian trouble.
None, really. We've been lucky. Folks down the Gulf have had some bad dealings with the Karankawas. Some I know up this way have been visited by the Wacos and the Tawakonese. Mostly they just steal horses if they get the chance, but I wouldn't like them to catch me out all by myself with no rifle.
I ain't even seen one the whole time I've lived here. The only rifle I've got stays at the house where my wife can use it to defend her laying hens from the varmints. Was I you, neighbor Nathan, I'd worry more about wolves than about Indians. Wolves will make short work of your chickens and then go after your calves.
Nathan nodded in satisfaction, watching his wife pour part of the contents of a pot into 3 cups.
They told us in San Felipe that this be a good place to put our roots down, but it's a comfort to hear from people who lived here for a while.
The coffee was, as Andrew suspected, a substitute made from parched corn. It occurred to him to wonder if anybody'd ever planted coffee beans here. He thought he might try. There were probably 12 good reasons why it wouldn't work, but he would find them all before he gave up. Parched corn made a poor drink, though he assured Mrs. Nathan that it was the best he'd had since leaving Tennessee. It was not always a sin to lie to one's neighbors. Andrew saw movement at the edge of the wood. He saw a big workhorse dragging a log. Behind, holding onto the long range, trudged a rail-thin man whose stride bespoke considerable age. Andrew squinted, trying to see him better, for something in the man's movements seemed familiar.
Who's that?
Oh, that's an old feller who come down with some horses to trade for whatever we might have that he could sell in Louisiana. I swapped him some of last winter's peltry catch for 3 horses. Ain't very good horses, but they can all walk.
Daniel showed me his pony. What's the old man's name?
Eli's his first name. I disremember if I even heard his last.
Pleasant?
Yeah, he's a pleasant old feller for a horse trader.
That too. But his name is Pleasant? Eli Pleasant?
That's right. I remember him telling me. You know him?
I'd know his hide in the tan yard.
A skinny hide it'd be. Ain't much body inside it.
Maybe not, but there's a heart in it as strong as a lion. I've told you about him, Lige. He was a friend of my father's, and he brought my brother Michael back from the gates of hell.
Andrew walked out toward Eli Pleasant, then in his eagerness broke into a run. The workhorse pulling the log shied away. Eli Pleasant saw it on the lines.
Whoa there! Whoa now! You, farmer, don't you know better than to run into a horse that way?
And you, old man, if you plumb lost your eyesight and you don't know me?
My God!
Pleasant dropped the lines on the ground and strode forward to meet Andrew. They threw their arms around one another and danced a jubilant little jig.
Oh, I swear, Eli, you ain't got a day younger.
And you, little brother Andrew, you ain't learned a damn thing about horses.
Andrew picked up the lines and started the plow horse to pull in the log again. Eli walked alongside him, more than willing to yield the heavy work to a much younger man.
Hey, how's your brother and Marie doing? I always thought the world of your brother. And I promised old man Bill O'Red I'd visit his daughter and grandchildren if I was to find a place where you all settled at.
They could easily have told you in San Felipe. Austin has a map on his wall.
Well, me and Mr. Austin, we've got a difference of opinion. The Mexican government has some kind of notion that I ought to pay duty on whenever I bring into Texas. Austin, he'd see that I went to a Mexican calabozo if I was to let him lay hands on me. So I taken roundings on San Felipe.
Eli Pleasant was by trade a smuggler. Long ago, he'd begun making a career of smuggling trade goods into Spanish Texas from Louisiana, defying the customs officials, and had smuggled Spanish goods back into Louisiana. When Mexico became independent, he had seen no reason to change his occupation, for it was regarded as a necessary and honorable one by the settlers who benefited from it. This ancient trade was condemned only by the officials. Eli had never been particular what government he cheated out of its revenues. Andrew decided there was no hurry about his getting to San Felipe and back home. The longer he took, the more time Michael would have to get over his resentment about the spoiling of his plan to travel. Andrew found himself enjoying the company, the easy camaraderie that went into cutting and shaping the logs and raising the walls of a cabin. And Mrs. Nathan knew her way around the cook fire. The Nathans were Alabama people. Mrs. Nathan's cooking reminded him of his mother's. She voiced her anticipation of being able to move into the cabin and cook on a real hearth after all these months living out of the wagon.
Oh, it'll be a blessing. Almost like we never left home.
The American colonists who had come into Texas had brought their old ways with them and had tried to duplicate in this new land the customs and the atmosphere they'd left behind them in the old. Thus, Texas had as yet developed few characteristics that were specifically its own. It was, in the main, still a rough copy of the southern states.
The only thing lacking now is a preacher to help us offer proper thanks for all the Lord has given us. Been a long time since we've been to proper services.
Ministers were about as scarce as real money in the colony.
If I happen across one, I'll send him to you.
At night, they sat around the dying fire and talked of old times back in Tennessee and Alabama, and in Lige Willett's case, Kentucky. After listening to Willett relate for an hour all the glories of the bluegrass country, Andrew wondered how he had ever brought himself to leave it. Eli Pleasant related his dark memories of the trip he had made to Texas with Andrew and Michael's father, and an eager group of Tennesseans seeking wild horses to take back and sell to farmers. Michael, 15 then, had followed behind, joining the group when they were too far from home for his father to send him back. After they had captured a sizable bunch of Texas Mustangs, the chronically quarrelsome Cyrus Blackwood defected in anger. Captured by Spanish soldiers, he betrayed the rest of the band to save himself. Eli missed the slaughter because he had ridden out to recapture some runaway animals. Finding Michael lying wounded among the many slain, he carried him to a Mexican family for first treatment, then spirited him out of Texas to recover in the Louisiana home of the Villaray family. It was then that Michael and Marie had begun a friendship that years later led to marriage.
Yeah, mean times they was. I hope we never see their like again.
We're under Mexico now instead of Spain. It's different.
The dancing light of the fire made the age lines look terribly deep in Eli's bewhiskered face.
Maybe.